Thank you for listening today. We at the National Counterintelligence and Security Center, or NCSC, in the Supply Chain and Cyber Directorate, decided to begin a series of audio interviews with experts and practitioners from government, industry, research, and academia to add to our robust outreach efforts. These interviews and outreach efforts are designed to help reduce threats to key U.S. supply chains and prevent foreign attempts to compromise the integrity, trustworthiness, and authenticity of products and services purchased and integrated into the operations of the United States. The exploitation of key supply chains by foreign adversaries, especially when executed in concert with cyber intrusions and insider threat activities, represents a complex and growing threat to strategically important U.S. economic sectors and critical infrastructure. My name is Matthew Halverson, the Strategic Program Manager for the Supply Chain Directorate. I will be conducting the interviews. It is our hope that this series of interviews will help educate people to supply chain threats, and we hope it highlights the efforts of many to help mitigate these threats. We are using COVID protocols, and as such, these interviews will be conducted using teleconference software. Please excuse any audio quality challenges. Thanks again for listening in. All right, next we have with us Greg Garcia. He is the Executive Director for Cybersecurity of the Health Sector Coordinating Council, the convening organization for critical healthcare infrastructure organizations working in partnership with HHS and other government agencies to protect the security and resilience of the sector, patient safety, and public health. Greg, thanks for being with us today.
Good to join you, Matt.
So, Greg, let's start out with some simple baseline here. Can you please sum up the Health Sector Coordinating Council and just give us a little background on it?
Yeah, the health sector is one of 16 federally designated critical infrastructure sectors, thinking of electricity and financial services and telecommunications and water and healthcare and public health. There are 16 sector coordinating councils just like us, and we are in effect federal advisory committees. We work in partnership with the government with the recognition that these critical sectors every day are facing any number of hazards and threats, whether they are natural threats like pandemics and hurricanes, or whether they are man-made like cyber attack. And so we work together to identify those threats and figure out ways to mitigate them over the long term, strategically, policy-wise, and we work in partnership with the more tactical and operational sector representatives known as the ISACs, the Information Sharing and Analysis Centers, and of course there is a Health ISAC. So together we are engaged in critical infrastructure protection for the healthcare sector and doing it in partnership among ourselves, across the industry, and with the government.
That's great. And now where do you fit in all of that, Greg?
So I am the executive director of the Sector Coordinating Council. It's actually sort of a unique position because most of the Sector Coordinating Councils are coalitions of the willing, volunteer organizations doing the best they can to organize themselves. I, as the executive director, basically am running an industry association, making sure that the trains are running on time, that there is a governance structure, that we are able to document our activities and provide all of the support needed so that the experts, the stakeholders, the ones who have the job of protecting their hospitals and their medical device companies and the pharmaceutical companies, that they can actually contribute content and thought leadership to developing ways to get better, to be more secure and resilient. And they just need somebody at a full-time level to making sure that that process is facilitated. So I'm a full-time executive director, full-time trade association manager.
Now, Greg, whether it's the election or the pandemic, those issues have caused healthcare to be recognized as an important topic for people. And we want to make sure that, you know, from its workers to the people it serves to industry advancements, all of that is in discussion. Despite the obstacles from all these angles, we don't hear a lot of talk about cybersecurity for the healthcare systems. Right now, what would you say is the biggest cyber threat to the healthcare system?
Yeah, good question. I will say we are talking about cybersecurity a whole lot more than we were 3 to 4 years ago, primarily because the health sector has become such a big, rich, juicy target. It's as if they've sort of moved on from the financial services sector. Willie Sutton robbed banks because that's where the money is. They did that with mouse clicks on the financial sector, but now they're doing it on the healthcare sector. Over the past several years, the biggest threats and attacks have been in ransomware. Ransomware, of course, being delivered by what is typically used, email phishing. And they drop the payload in, and the payload infiltrates a hospital network, and it extracts all of the data and then encrypts it. And it sends to the hospital a notice that if you want your data back, you're going to have to pay a ransom in Bitcoin. And of course, this data includes things like patient information. It includes diagnostic data. It includes payment data. It includes scheduling for surgeries. Everything that enables a hospital to do its work suddenly becomes encrypted, and they cannot get back to work until they get that data back. So do they pay the ransom or not? So this is a development that is now extremely common, almost an epidemic. But in the sector council, we've been putting together a lot of best practices, a lot of guidance documents to help hospital systems and others in the healthcare value chain to prepare against those events and to be able to respond to them when and if they do happen.
So, Chris, as we continue this conversation with obviously the pandemic in mind, the COVID-19 pandemic has created this vaccine race, and everybody is paying extremely close attention to this race. Where does cybersecurity fit into protecting the research and development on these projects for vaccines or, you know, for therapeutics for the COVID-19?
Yeah, and this is essential. We actually started 2 years ago to develop guidance on particularly for research universities and pharmaceutical companies that do tremendous amounts of research, that critical intellectual property, in particular patents and research data, are vulnerable to cyber attack, cyber exfiltration, particularly from nation states, state-sponsored. And that we put together best practices for guarding against cyber attacks against intellectual property. And for many pharmaceutical companies, that's their crown jewel. And as that document, we released it in May of this year. It's called the Healthcare Industry Cybersecurity Protection of Intellectual Capital, Innovation Capital. That is on our website at healthsectorcouncil.org. As we were finishing up the publication of that, COVID-19 struck. And with COVID-19 came Operation Warp Speed, a highly public politically charged and visible operation by the government in partnership with industry. Clearly, that then becomes a target. So as organizations are ramping up their research for a COVID vaccine, the cyber adversaries are ramping up their exploitation activities. And so this is where cybersecurity and all the tools and techniques at our disposal need to be deployed to protect research data, vaccine data, pharmaceutical data from being exploited and exfiltrated by whether they're criminal gangs or whether they are nation states in the race for the vaccine.
Thanks for that, Greg. I'd like to do a little transition here and look at cybersecurity as it relates to supply chain risk management. So a year ago, the Healthcare Public Health Sector Coordinating Council released the Health Industry Cybersecurity Supply Chain Risk Management Guide. And then it was updated just this September of 2020. Can you briefly just talk about the origins of this document?
Absolutely. So it's become a cliche that in cybersecurity that we're only as strong as our weakest link. And we have a value chain in healthcare, as does any major critical sector. You have vendors and you have service providers. Those vendors and service providers have their own vendors and service providers. And so that's the supply chain. That is the value chain. And unless we as major customers of these vendors and service providers, unless we have some level of confidence that our supply chain is secure from cyber attack, that when we connect our systems together or we buy these devices or technology from vendors, if we don't have some level of assurance that those products and services are cyber secure, then we ourselves as major customers are importing vulnerabilities into our system. So supply chain security gets to the question of how you manage a complex supply chain in your environment. And we really took our cue from the NIST cybersecurity framework, originally published in 2014, which was revised a couple of years later to include a supply chain cybersecurity risk management process. And so we simply took that tool and we tailored it for the healthcare system. We tailored it to the healthcare system language so that hospital systems and device makers and pharmaceuticals and plans and payers, health IT, that they can integrate the NIST cyber framework supply chain of process into their risk management program. So we did version one of that. When you look at the NIST framework supply chain guidance, it's broken up into five core functions. We took the first three over the course of a year. We prepared that guidance and we said, you know what, this is really important information. Let's get it out now. And so that was released. The now was about this time last year. And then the task group that was co-chaired by Johnson & Johnson and Merck, they immediately got to work finishing the guidance document by adding the last two core functions in the NIST framework. So numbers four and five. Now version two is simply a coherent whole. We have put that out. We put that out September 22nd. And we are doing everything we can with our government partners to evangelize its adoption and implementation across the sector. And it's scalable for both small organizations and hospitals to medium and large.
Now, on that outreach that you guys have been doing, how has it been received, the document itself?
Very well. Anecdotally, there's nothing but great compliments for it and comments like we are implementing this, or this is exactly what we have been doing, so this validates our process. One of our priorities in 2021, I suspect, will be a much more systematic and structured measurement of the adoption and implementation of all of our guidance documents. We have published now, I think, 11 of them over the past 2 years. From hospital cybersecurity best practices to medical device cybersecurity to workforce development, information sharing, intellectual capital, as you mentioned earlier, supply chain, all of these, we want to start measuring how well is the healthcare system doing in first being aware of these things, secondly, adopting them and committing the resources and investments necessary to implement some of this. And then how are they, you know, are they implementing it? And over time, the most difficult question is, are they effective at improving security?
Yeah. So, Greg, I'm going to ask you a question that comes up a lot at NCSC, particularly when we talk about cybersecurity, but in the supply chain realm as well, is how has the Internet of Things and embedded devices changed the landscape for security in the healthcare sector?
By an order of magnitude. So one of our key partners besides HHS in the government is the Food and Drug Administration, which of course has jurisdiction over regulating medical devices. And as medical devices and the medical Internet of Things has become more and more connected, if not over the internet, then over hospital networks and wirelessly and Bluetooth, these connections, these network connections of medical devices have really improved healthcare because it gives doctors remote access to data about a patient's health improving or declining. There's all kinds of benefits for the medical Internet of Things and connected medical devices, but there's also risk. And the risk is, of course, when you are putting anything over a network, wired or wirelessly, you are introducing vulnerabilities. And those vulnerabilities can have an impact on patient safety. And that is what we are laser focused on. Fortunately, we have no reported instances of a cyber attack on an implantable device. You know, we've seen the horror story on the series 24 or one of the Homeland Security programs where the vice president's pacemaker was hacked into and he was given a heart attack. Those scenarios we know are possible, but we have not seen them happen to the extent that it has impacted patient safety. But nevertheless, to be a cybersecurity expert is to be paranoid. And that means that we have to prepare for those instances and work together, number one, to build security into connected devices, whether they are implantable or whether they are on premises in a hospital, build security in from the medical device manufacturer side, number one, and number two, work with the healthcare providers to strengthen the management of the security of those devices in the clinical environment. So it's really two pieces. It's building it in, but it's maintaining the security of the legacy devices as they age throughout the life cycle of a product's use in the clinical environment. So how has it affected the cyber landscape? It has certainly complicated it and expanded the footprint of cyber adversaries. So we just have to be exponentially more vigilant. And we're getting there. There's a tremendous amount of cooperation between the medical device manufacturers and the clinical operations. To be sure that we understand who's responsible for security at this point in the life cycle of a product, who's accountable, and how do we work together to make sure we have optimal situational awareness.
So, Greg, you mentioned the outreach when we were talking about the guide earlier. And when you look at some of the topics we've covered today under cybersecurity, ransomware, the supply chain, Internet of Things, you know, what are some of the strategies that the council's using, you know, to consistently communicate, you know, with an industry that has, you know, large, multinational corporations down to smaller healthcare providers?
Great, great question. And it's really important to us. We have a membership now of about 300 organizations. It literally grows every day. And these organizations are across the spectrum. As I've mentioned, device manufacturers and hospitals and so on. About three dozen of them are industry associations. Industry associations like the American Hospital Association, AdvaMed, America's Health Insurance Plans, these all in turn have a large membership base. And so when we put out our publications, and mind you, the Sector Coordinating Council does not charge dues. We do not have a budget. As a federal advisory committee, we cannot be charging dues. So we rely on our member organizations, whether it is the trade associations that have the membership, or indeed we have some advisor companies, some large consulting firms, and some small consulting firms who have a lot of clients. And we ask them, look, when you go out to the into the field to consult with your clients or trade associations, when you communicate with your members anything about cybersecurity, you should be advocating the use of the Sector Coordinating Council's guidance documents, because these documents are by the industry and for the industry. And similarly, the government helps us out with this. I mentioned medical device security. In January of last year, we produced the Medical Device Joint Security Plan, how to build security into medical devices. The Food and Drug Administration co-chaired that task group, along with the Mayo Clinic and Becton Dickinson. So FDA, when they go out into public, into conferences, industry conferences, and in some of their documents, guidance documents, they recommend that organizations, companies, and medical devices use the Joint Security Plan. The HHS Office of the Chief Information Officer, OCIO, they co-chaired the task group that resulted in the Healthcare Industry Cybersecurity Practices, or HICCP, H-I-C-P. It is called HICCP. HICCP is a guidance document for hospitals on better cybersecurity practices. Here are the top 10 practices you need to deploy. HHS co-chaired that, so they are advocating it. They are devoting resources to it. And so we are using this coalition of participants to actively drive these guidance documents out into the field and endorse their use. And as I mentioned, over time, we're going to try to sort of gather up all of the data that might, or the feedback to those surrogate marketers, if you will, the government, the trade associations, the consulting firms, and let's structure some kind of a measurement process so that we can actually report back to the public, to the healthcare sector, to the Congress if they invite us up, to our friends in the FBI and the intelligence community. Are we doing better today than we were 5 years ago in cybersecurity? And I very well want to be able to say yes, and here's how, and here are the numbers. So, no, I thank you for that question, because that's really going to be, I think, one of our priorities in the next year.
So, Greg, as we come to a close here over at NCSC, we want to help with your outreach. So I'll ask you, if people want to know more about the Health Sector Coordinating Council, where can they get that information?
Well, thank you. The first stop is Health Sector Council.org. That is our website. All of our documents are freely available on that website. If you are a healthcare organization and you would like to get involved, there is a contact page. I would also strongly recommend that if you are a healthcare organization and you are not yet a member of the Health ISAC that I mentioned before, you should be. That does, for very small dues, enable your membership. But that is the community awareness group. You need to be a part of that. It's the neighborhood watch, as it were, that brings together all of the stakeholders in the healthcare sector, and they openly share information with each other about attacks and threats and how they're dealing with it. And it's a whole of community approach where, you know, the notion is, none of us is as smart individually as all of us collectively, and so that's a principle that we live by. And so if you are participating in the ISAC and in the Sector Coordinating Council, you got your bases covered. And then to have important partnerships with the FBI and NCSC and HHS, Department of Homeland Security, Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, and others. We are forearmed and forewarned against the hackers.
Great. Well, Greg, listen, we really appreciate all the work that the council is doing, you know, for our healthcare industry, obviously for our families. So we greatly appreciate that. And we really appreciate you being here with us tonight. Today we value your time, and it's been a great conversation.
Well, thanks, Matt, for your partnership. And I appreciate all the good questions. It gives us an opportunity to get the word out because, you know, we're all in this together. And ultimately, we cannot have patient safety without cyber safety.
Great. Thanks.